evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, May 6th. I'm Sigurd Bjørn, reporting for KMET. In tonight's news, a bomb squad detonates explosives in Mendocino County. Local group offers free help and hope for Humboldt residents struggling with literacy. And if you stick with us all the way through, we'll have an interview with Humboldt and Del Norte Film Commissioner Cassandra Heseltine about working with a masked Oscar winner, fake redwood logs, and the state of filming on the North Coast. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. We start with a story about explosive devices on the North Coast, triggered by a controlled explosion in Mendocino County last week. This follows a similar operation by the Humboldt County Bomb Squad in Alder Point 2 weeks earlier, which KMUD News covered at the time. Here is Captain Quincy Cromer with the Mendocino Sheriff's Office about last week's incident.
The sheriff's office was called to the area of the 8600 block of North State Street in Redwood Valley to investigate a reported explosive device that had been detonated in that area. The Redwood Valley Cal Poly Fire District personnel had already responded to that area for a reported fire, and they discovered a small gas fire that had already been extinguished by quick-acting members of the community. So upon further investigation of the scene, it was determined the source of the fire was an explosive device that had been ignited in an abandoned shopping cart. And then a battalion chief with the Ukiah Valley Fire Authority responded to assist and determine the crime of arson had been committed. So we examined the scene, which revealed a section of the shopping cart that was destroyed and scattered about the ground and leaving an approximately 100-foot debris field. Fragments of the destructive device were located and believed to be similar to an incident that was investigated by the Highway Patrol the day prior on April 30th of 2025. Personnel from the Sonoma County Sheriff's Office Bomb Squad did respond to that incident on the 30th of April and rendered the device safe.
Rendering a device safe means the bomb was detonated on scene by a bomb squad. Members of the squad confirmed the devices from the two incidents were similar in make.
And since this incident, these types of incidents don't occur very frequently, it was obviously believed they would be related. Further investigation into this incident revealed that on the May 1st incident, the destructive device was wrapped in several layers of packing tape and was ignited with a fuse that had been placed into the shopping cart by a male adult who was later identified as Todd Scott, who is a 49-year-old male from Ukiah. Based on these two similar devices being placed in public over 2 days, concern was raised that Scott may have additional explosives or materials to build explosive devices and or intend to deploy them somewhere. So efforts were made to locate Scott as quickly as possible. A warrant was obtained to search his residence. Scott was ultimately contacted around 6 p.m. during a traffic stop, a vehicle stop in Redwood Valley. And based on the evidence obtained during this investigation, Scott's own statements and the search warrant, he was arrested for the charge of for detonating or igniting an explosive device and arson causing damage to land. And during the service of the search warrant at Scott's home, a third device that had not been completely constructed yet was located along with three firearms, and it was determined that Scott was prohibited from owning or possessing firearms due to prior criminal convictions. And the explosive and firearms were seized as evidence during this investigation. So Scott was booked into the Mendocino County Jail and was later released after posting bail on those charges. And additional charges are being sought and sent to the district attorney regarding the illegal possession of firearms by Scott.
During a raid in Alder Point in mid-April, the Humboldt County Bomb Squad detonated two bombs on the scene. Three people, believed to be brothers, were taken into custody, and while these two incidents are not related, they do represent a sharp spike in cases involving explosives. Captain Cromer again.
This is an abnormal investigation that does not occur very often. I mean, if you would ask me, other than the knowledge I had from the press coverage on the previous incident, I bet it's been a few years before these types of crimes have been investigated in this county. So I don't think there's an overwhelming concern that this is becoming commonplace, but it is abnormal that there have been a few in the last few months.
Cromer believes last week's arrest of Todd Scott of Ukiah is an isolated incident and not related to any kind of organized effort to manufacture bombs.
I think it was just somebody putting them along a ditch or a roadside and just seeing if it would go off. And there was no other motives or ambitions that I'm aware of to cause any type of panic or injuries to other people.
That said, Cromer encourages the public to be vigilant if they see suspicious packages.
If you see something, say something and call the professionals to go examine it and figure it out, because these devices can be unsafe to even approach, obviously.
That was Captain Quincy Cromer with the Mendocino Sheriff's Office speaking to KMUT. While literacy is often taken for granted, thousands of adults in Humboldt County face daily challenges due to limited reading and writing skills. A local nonprofit is stepping up to change that, and they're inviting the community to join the effort in a fun and meaningful way this week. Lauren Schmidt reports.
For the last 10 years, Humboldt County has reported an adult illiteracy rate of approximately 15%, equating to around 14,000 residents who struggle with reading or writing.
It means that probably struggle to, for instance, fill out a simple form, apartment rental application, or something even simpler than that.
That was Emma Bracon with the Humboldt Literacy Project, which offers free tutoring to adults across the region. The organization helps to build reading and writing skills people need to succeed on the job, at home, or in the community. The Humboldt Literacy Project believes that the ability to read is a right and not a privilege.
Maybe you were pushed through school and you even got a diploma, but you just don't have the skills to get the kind of job that you need to live the kind of life that you want to have. Maybe you had an illness or an injury. Maybe you were completely literate and you had a stroke and you're regaining your skills. There's a lot of ways to be an illiterate adult in the United States of America in 2025.
Expanding literacy empowers individuals with greater opportunities in education, employment, and civic participation, opening the door to a more informed and fulfilling life. Their primary program is one-on-one literacy tutoring, but they also offer English as a second language and family literacy programs throughout the county.
Various library branches where we're doing things like printmaking, songwriting, puppet making. So we want the whole family working together. And we also offer our services in jail. We tutor incarcerated people as well, so that maybe they'll have a few better prospects when they re-enter society after they've served their time.
There is both a social and financial cost to illiteracy. According to proliteracy.org, bringing all adults in the U.S. to a sixth grade reading level could generate an additional $2.2 trillion in annual income nationwide. Locally, the Humboldt Literacy Project highlights that 75% of people incarcerated in state prisons did not complete high school or are considered low literate. Studies also show that incarcerated individuals who participate in correctional education programs are 43% less likely to recidivate compared to those who do not.
You can just Google illiteracy and crime rates, illiteracy and unplanned pregnancy, illiteracy and dependence on tax-paid social services. I think it's all just a result of fewer options. Just your inability to read and write well just has a cascading effect on your life of the kind of job that you can get, the kind of income you can get, the kind of hobbies you can have, the kind of place you can live. You know, it's very hard, but we are trying to help people raise their skill levels so that Humboldt's businesses can have, you know, a ready workforce, can have a great pool of potential people to hire from. Some of our learners have gone on to start their own businesses. Some of our learners have gone on to become teachers, firefighters. So it's pretty exciting, if I do say so myself.
There's a fun opportunity to support the Humboldt Literacy Project on May 8th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Eureka Women's Club. The event is the 20th anniversary of the Great Humboldt Trivia Challenge. Bricon says it's the most fun you can have while taking on a serious issue, illiteracy. This beloved event has become a proud Humboldt County tradition.
Yes, Thursday, May 8th is our 20th anniversary trivia challenge. It is a terrific event. We've got a lot of sass and an attitude between the judges and the players. We've got dinner, we've got a no-host bar, we've got desserts, and we invite teams to register ahead of time. All the details are at humboldtliteracy.org, everything you know to come to the Trivia Challenge. If you want to play on a team, register beforehand, and we'll be ready for you. However, audience members, if you think you know the answer to a question, you can bid. And the greatest part is that you don't have to be a real know-it-all to enjoy the Trivia Challenge. We do try and give you high-quality questions and thoughtful judging on whether the answers are right or wrong. We're really trying to do it right. But you want to have a good time, you want to support a good cause, you want to eat a delicious enchilada dinner, we've got a humor judge. So if you don't know how tall the Statue of Liberty is, and by the way, we're not going to ask you how many feet and how many inches and what year or anything, but if you don't know, we've got a humor judge, we've got a local stand-up comic, Josh Barnes, who will be giving out prizes for the funniest wrong answers. And then we've got some excellent prize baskets for the people who know the right answers as well.
Teams and spectators are all welcome. To learn more about the event and the organization's ongoing programs, you can visit humboldtliteracy.org.
That was Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUT. Before we turn to our interview with Film Commissioner Cassandra Heseltine about the state of filming in Humboldt and Del Norte, Daniel Mintz brings us this report on efforts by Humboldt County Planning Commission to reduce vehicle use.
Humboldt County is advancing a policy to reduce vehicle miles traveled, and the Planning Commission is split on the fundamental question of how existing levels should be defined. A state law, Senate Bill 743, has changed the way transportation impacts are analyzed. Part of achieving the goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions, the impacts are now gauged using vehicle miles traveled as a basis rather than factors like traffic congestion. The county's impact analyses are done on a case-by-case basis now, but that will change, and the commission reviewed a draft vehicle miles traveled, VMT, policy at its May 1st meeting. The threshold for defining significant VMT impact is based on current levels. In Humboldt cities, there's less VMT, and the county has a choice between using the entire county, including cities, to define a baseline or existing level, or to focus on the unincorporated county-controlled area, as recommended by staff. County Planner Megan Acevedo detailed the per-trip differences between the unincorporated county area and the countywide area, including cities.
For unincorporated Humboldt County, the average VMT per resident was 22.1 miles per day, and the average VMT per employee was 14.7 miles per day. The streetlight data also identified the countywide averages, including data for the incorporated cities. These averages were found to be 20.1 miles per resident per day and 13.2 miles per employee per day. The county has the option to use the unincorporated county averages or the countywide averages, including the cities, to set a baseline and threshold.
In the draft policy, a development project's VMT impact is considered significant if its per resident or per employee VMT is 85% or more of the county's average. The commission debated whether or not to include cities, which would lower the overall baseline. There was doubt about whether the policy's VMT baselines are accurate. It's important because the lower the baseline, the more likely projects will be required to mitigate VMT impacts. Commissioner Thomas Mulder said Southern Humboldt is particularly doubtful of the baselines.
I mean, I've heard arguments down in Southern Humboldt that this number is, like, horrible. It should be 30, 35, maybe even 40. So we're both here different sides of the spectrum. I think this number is somewhere in the middle. People could easily argue one way or the other, but the thing I really want to get back to, are we a county and making a countywide policy, or are we putting in a petition to split this county up? That's kind of like the more centralized data. Or I guess maybe is the goal, the policy, really to make sure there's an EIR for every single project that comes before this county? Because all the time that I've been on the commission, I know we have, you know, development after development coming forward. So we may want to think about setting policy that encourages that development to come in the door rather than to a different county.
But Commissioner Jerome Kiriazi said significant work will have to be done on a community-wide scale, and permitting of development should match it. Commissioner Noah Levy said using the unincorporated area's VMT level with a lower baseline would screen out too much of the county from impact analysis.
There's places where if we set the threshold so that, let's just say, McKinleyville mostly screens out, do we then lose the opportunity to incentivize doing some of the things that they nevertheless could do on a development in McKinleyville that would be mitigations that would further reduce the actual need for driving?
Commission Chair Ivor Skavdal said using the countywide baseline will trigger VMT mitigations in areas where development should be encouraged. And quote, if we keep thinking that we're going to put another straw in the camel's back of the developer every single time in order to improve the environment in some way, we're just piling more on the camel that's already got a broken back. With one commissioner absent, the six members of the commission gave up on trying to forge a majority straw vote on the scope of the total VMT area. A majority of the commission voted to recommend approval of the draft policy by the Board of Supervisors, with the caveat that there's division on what the baseline VMT should be. Mulder voted against the recommendation. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Last week, we aired an interview with Humboldt and Del Norte Film Commissioner Cassandra Heseltine, focusing on film tourism in the area and the upcoming Forest Moon Festival. What follows is the second of three parts of our interview, which centers on film production. The commissioner talks about what goes into bringing a high-profile production to the Redwoods, as happened when Academy Award winners Leonardo DiCaprio and Paul Thomas Anderson came here in January 2024. And it did not happen when the Netflix series Virgin River went to Canada, despite being set in Humboldt. It would come as no surprise to anyone when Film Commissioner Heseltine confirms that the Redwoods themselves are the number one reason crews come here to film. That would seem self-evident. But, according to the commissioner, much more goes into getting production companies to spend their budget in Humboldt and Del Norte than showing them a photo of a random Sempervirens.
I would say the number one reason is the Redwoods. You know, that's historically, you know, we have the largest groves of old growth Redwoods. You know, ours are so majestic. So not only is the tree itself, but we have, you know, low population. So you're not going to run into as much people or traffic, or where you're trying to film isn't going to have that kind of a problem. So even though we have a lot of tourism, there's so many groves, you know, that they can find, you know, or the parks will sometimes, you know, close the section off just for filming, you know, it works in their favor in regards to that. Obviously, our roads are pretty spectacular because of the background to them, as well as, you know, our coastline, our Victorians. You know, I would say those are the four top location reasons. The other thing that we're starting to find is people really appreciate the help, like, that we're super film friendly as a community, that the Film Commission itself, you know, we do a lot of hand holding. I used to be a producer for 10 years. You know, I worked in producing and casting and crew, and my other staff member worked in film and location. So we offer a lot of help besides, like, here's where you apply for a permit. You know, we really want to help them with all aspects because they're from out of the area. They don't know everybody and how to, you know, get something done in our area necessarily. And, you know, I think they really appreciate that. So we go above and beyond, of helping them with anything that they may need within reason, obviously, to accommodate and help make it a win-win, so that our community benefits from their outside dollars coming to the area, job creation, and but yet at the same time, we do hold them to certain standards, like they need to take care good care of our people and our environment and be, beneficial to the area.
Paul Thomas Anderson's One Battle After Another is an example of a film shoot that benefited the area.
That movie actually filmed in January, which was awesome because it dropped a couple million, in the month that everyone knows hotels and restaurants are at their lowest. And so we were lucky to have them in January of 2024, spend that money in our economy when, everyone's just spent a whole bunch of money for the holidays. I started that movie in April of 2019. So pre-pandemic was my first meeting for that film. And that's a little bit more abnormal. I mean, though After Earth, I think it was about a year. Wrinkle in Time was about 6 months. Bird Box was probably 6 months to 9 months. But yeah, the PTA movie was 5 years, but mostly because we started it, the pandemic happened, he went on to make another movie, and then he circled back and came back to this film. But in the meantime, he would come, Paul Thomas Anderson himself would come to scout, and he would ask for help, like ask for submissions of homes, and we would collect them, send them to him. He'd pick the top ones. He would ask us to reach out to the homeowner and say, hey, are you willing to have the director? We couldn't say who he was at the time, but we'd say, are you okay with the director and a producer and myself coming through your home? You're on the short list now of what they're interested in. And so I would go meet Paul, and at the time everyone was wearing masks, so people couldn't recognize him. And so we'd walk through these people's homes, and I'd be like, this is a famous Academy Award-winning director, and you don't even know he's in your house right now. So it started with things like that to we need a high school, and setting up meetings for the high school. So a lot of location meetings and then permits, but then going into, they asked for crew or casting, any element that they need. And when they arrive, they needed to ship a whole bunch of things to Humboldt that needed to arrive before they did, and some boxes and things. So at the time, it was hard for us at our workplace to receive the boxes. So I had them ship them to my house. I've done that many times. Props have been delivered. Matter of fact, I have one from Sasquatch Sunset still, a big fake log that's probably like 20 feet long that's in my garage right now. So we go above and beyond.
High-profile filming in Humboldt and Del Norte is a huge boon for the two counties. Not only does it bring in dollars, it also lifts the profile of the area and directs tourist traffic to it. But magnificent trees, scenic roads, and Victorian mansions are not enough to keep filmmakers interested in filming here. It takes a concentrated effort, not just by the local film commission, with its staff of 2.5 people, but also the powers that be in Sacramento and Hollywood.
We've had big studio feature films maybe once every 5 to 10 years. And we, had maybe indies once every couple years. And then mostly were commercials, specifically car commercials. I noticed actually commercials starting to slowly shift and drop down over the past decade. And our indie feature films and studio feature films actually increase, which was great. And I think that a lot of that had to do with the tax incentive, the California tax incentive program, trying to keep productions here in California. And you got more points the farther you filmed north in California. So that was great. So people loved our area. They were going to get an incentive. It was a win-win. With 120 other tax incentive programs around the world, and some of these state and country ones having double of what we offer, we aren't competitive anymore, to Georgia and New York or Canada or Georgia, the country, even. Like some of them have 40% tax rebates even or incentive. And we only at this time have 20% with a couple add-ons. And with all of that, our numbers are just bleeding out, unfortunately, which is good that we're focusing on film tourism to compensate, but we still need those productions to come back to continue to film in the area. And so I did spend some time a couple weeks ago in Sacramento lobbying to try to help bring production back to the area with like the San Francisco Film Commissioner and the Sacramento Film Commissioner and a handful of others, and also the union and the commercial producers advisor. They're all saying the same thing, that we're bleeding out as a state as far as filming goes, and that we have to come up with a comparable competitive incentive.
With Governor Gavin Newsom's support, bills are moving through both chambers of the California legislature to raise the cap of the state's tax incentive program from $330 million to $750.
Which would be amazing, but he still needs to make the actual incentive more comparable, because even if the pie is larger, if it still only is 20%, that doesn't compete with a 40% one. Yeah. So we still need to actually have the overall individual project be able to reap more of a benefit.
As things stand now in Sacramento, available credit could go up to 35% in California, which would make the state competitive with states like Georgia and New York. Because of the cap on tax incentives has historically been 20% in California, even shows that were supposedly set in the Redwoods were going to Canada to film.
We're not competitive in a lot of ways. And like TV shows like Eureka, literally it was called Eureka. They said they were in Eureka. They filmed it in Canada. Virgin mm-hmm. River, the same thing. They don't even call my office because they don't need to. They know already that if they go to Canada and they're going to have a better tax credit or rebate, and that they don't care that the trees are not redwoods and that they're probably Doug firs, you know, that they, to them, it looks similar enough on camera that they can get away with it. So that's what they choose to do, unfortunately. So we don't even hear about the project until it comes out later and they're claiming to be in our area, you know, as part of their storyline.
That was the second of three parts of our interview with Film Commissioner Cassandra Heseltine. The third and final part focuses on the infamous documentary Murder Mountain that left people in Southern Humboldt furious over the portrayal of the area.
I got death threats over it. You know, people thought that somehow I was doing something that was doing, you know, and it's just.
While you are waiting to get the skinny on all that, you can go to kmut.org or your favorite podcast platform to hear the first part of the interview. Searching for Kmut, Wookiees and Ewoks should bring that episode to the top of the pile. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Lauren Schmidt and Daniel Mintz. My name is Sigurd Björn. Thank you for listening.
Kmut News is online. You can find us on kmut.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commute. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmut.org.